I left the Republican Party 10 years ago. I did it because I saw the direction it was going. It didn't, you know, line up with my values. When my values, like I said, are you accept everybody, celebrate everybody, the diversity of the city is the strength of the city. That's not where they were heading.
Hello, all, and welcome to Marsha, 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 the podcast. I'm your host, Marsha Molinari, and you are here listening to the podcast that brings true and heartfelt human connection. I believe if you don't know about it, you can't care about it. And that's why we're here today. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Marsha, 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 the podcast. I have a very special guest today. It's Rick Caruso. Hi, Rick. How are you today?
Hi, Marsha. I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So you're running for mayor, right?
Yes, I am. Very excited about that.
I'm excited for you.
Thank you.
Well, let's get right into it. Let's get into why we should vote for you for mayor. I mean, we know the things we do know about you. You're a successful businessman. You have a successful real estate company. And, you know, I'll tell you that, you know, when I tell people that I was interviewing you today, the first thing they want to go into is the one thing, and they put you together with Trump because of these two things. But there's so much more to you that I know, and I want you to tell the audience what's the difference.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to do that.
Definitely,
I am nothing like Donald Trump, and I want to make it clear to everybody that I never supported Donald Trump. I never gave him a dime. He wanted actually to campaign at the Grove, and I banned him from the Grove. He was very upset. When he first announced that he was running, I was clear and on the record that I didn't think he had the integrity or the character to be president. And as we all saw, that proved to be true. So many of us felt that way. But you know, the problem with this campaign is it's by the opposite side, who I'm running against, really want to make it about scaring people and identity politics. And, you know, I'm a man of my faith. I'm a man of my family. I believe in my community. And I have a core value that I love and accept everybody. And I want people to celebrate their lives. And that's what's driving me to run. And if there was ever a time, Marsha, that we see the danger and the corruption and how our system is broken, it's been over the last couple of days.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about that, because there are three council members that were recently caught on a recording of them being very racist, saying terrible, terrible things. What are your thoughts about that? And what can we know that you're going to do to keep your council members from being anything like that, to having a diverse table of people that represent all of Los Angeles? And that is, you know, that goes all the way through.
Right.
And everybody wants to be and seen represented in, you know,
The
city council.
You know, one of the, I would start by saying, I have zero tolerance for corruption. I have served the city starting with Mayor Tom Bradley when I was 26 years old, and then serving under Dick Reardon, and then serving under Jim Hahn. And my number one rule was, when you are a public servant, you're a servant of the public, and you wake up every day and do the right thing for everybody.
Exactly.
What was happening in that room is they were trying to carve up the city like it was their private piece of pie. It was disgusting.
Disgusting.
And then the racist and hatred comments that they were making about a huge amount of people in Los Angeles, the black community.
Children.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Right? Zero tolerance. I called for them to resign. I just found out that Nuri finally resigned. The other two need to resign.
Yes.
In City Hall, I will have zero tolerance for any of that. You act that way,
and
you're
gone. Did this right away.
Right away, I did it. Yes. I did it early.
That's important.
Because it was the right thing to do. You're right. I wouldn't allow it in my own company. If you want to know how I operate and what my core values are and where my heart is, come to any one of my properties. Do you feel welcome? Of course.
Definitely.
Everybody is welcome.
Well,
what inspires me.
Let me tell you a little bit about that. So I arrived today, and because of the time crunch I had, I decided to get my eye makeup done at Sephora.
Great.
And Joseph at Sephora is, I'm telling him what I'm doing, and he tells me, he goes, you know what? Rick is great. Mm-hmm. And you know why? because he has a clear plan. I looked up at him and I said, you know Rick's plan? He goes, oh, I've heard him speak and I know his plan. And he gave a clear plan where most people don't have one. I'm just getting my eye makeup done. And like, he's telling me this.
I love it.
And so, you know, and I can tell that through the last couple of months of knowing you, through everyone that works with you, through people that I've known that have volunteered for you, they have all had the most beautiful things to say about you, mm-hmm. the most welcoming things to say about you. And the other things that do get said about you, like I said, the Trump things, they immediately are like, yes, lots of people like to think this, but working on his campaign and working with him personally, he's nothing like what everybody immediately wants to jump to.
Yeah,
with
that's great
to hear. Perceptions of, you know, without even doing research, I've had my own friends be like, well, he's this, he's that. I said, well, have you actually heard him speak? Because I'll tell you, my business partner, when he first introduced me to you, he said, Marcia, I'm not pushing him on you. I just want you, please, to have an open ear and come. And after that, you can decide. And I'm always ready to learn and listen. And so when I did come that first night, you were ready. And one, you were welcoming. And that was important. And everyone in your team was overly welcoming. And what they had to say about you, and it wasn't just because I know people want to go back on how you just became a Democrat and all these things, but these are people that have been with you for years and years and years. And I do actually want to touch base on how people want to say you just became a Democrat, because I was telling people in this room, if my mother can change from being a Republican because of what she saw that was happening in the Republican, yeah. just like you,
right?
She is the last person on this earth that I would ever think to change her political views. But just having a little bit of insight and, you know, just compassion for everyone, she was like, no, I was wrong the first go around, and she actually did vote for Trump. But second time around, she said no.
Yeah.
People do change in their political views, their views on anything like that. I think you're allowed to.
Of course.
And the fact that you're coming forward, I think it speaks very highly of who you are and what you stand for. And rather than sitting back and sticking in a position where it's safer, maybe, because, you know, you kind of like are comfortable with what you do know. But if you're not comfortable, I think it takes someone bigger to step out of those realms and shoes yeah. and all those things that are attached to it.
I think that's really well said. And I left the Republican Party 10 years ago. I did it because I saw the direction it was going. It didn't, you know, line up with my values. When my values, like I said, are you accept everybody, celebrate everybody, the diversity of the city is the strength of the city. That's not where they were heading. And it's been reaffirmed in my mind when you have Republican governors that are rounding up immigrants, putting them on buses and planes, sending them to different cities, and using them as props. And when I see that, I literally want to
cry. There's no humanity. There's
no humanity.
Yeah.
And I think of my grandparents. They came here when they were young, they didn't know the language, they had no money.
See, I think that's probably like a misconception people have of you. They probably think that you just came from a lineage of money.
No,
you know, you
that's
have
right.
gold doubloons somewhere, you know.
My one grandfather was a gardener. I grew up riding in his truck. I learned about Los Angeles looking through the windshield of his gardening truck. My other grandfather was an elevator operator, wow. right? Modest, humble, just good, decent people. And even then, they always taught us, and my parents taught us, you accept everybody. Everybody's welcome at the table. Their big rule was, which I use with my family, there's always a seat at the table for dinner. There's always space. And that's the idea that, yes, you welcome everybody. How could you not?
Right.
And so I embrace the Democratic Party because it represents my values. But my Democratic Party, and you know, my opponent criticizes me. Why would you criticize anybody for anything? My
exactly.
Democratic Party has a big tent. The
right.
water's warm. Let's all jump in together, and let's all rise together. That's what I want to do.
Definitely, that is the kind of point. So let's walk through, if you are elected, that first day of being mayor. Okay, so I was thinking about this on my drive, and thinking the kind of shoulder weight you're going to have to, like, our problems now become your problem. That first day, how do you compartmentalize that? You know, with the right team, I'm sure.
Right.
But, like, you know, everyday issues that I have, we have, the things that I hear are now going to become, they're going to rest on your shoulders. So what does that look like for you?
I'm eager for that to happen, to be honest. I will tell you this. I think they're already my problems.
Yeah.
Right? They're already your problems.
Yeah, definitely.
We're living with them.
Yeah.
And the weight of it is every day when you're worried about going for a walk after dinner, or a child going to school, or looking at our parks, or watching people literally live and die in the streets, which is just so inhumane. The thing I'm so excited about is that I'll have an opportunity day one to start changing the direction of the city. I'm gonna have a bunch of meetings with a lot of the leaders. I'm gonna have a meeting with the chief of police, the chief of the fire department. You know, the fire department came out and endorsed me. I'm very proud of that and excited about it, because they are literally on the front line dealing with so many of the problems we're all dealing with and trying to save all of us from a lot of things. But building a team is critically important, and that's why my experience from business is really going to help. This is a massive city. It's a complex enterprise, an $11 billion budget, 50 different departments all reporting to the mayor. You have to have business experience, managerial experience
Definitely.
In order to do this.
I know this.
We've had somebody for the last 10 years that hasn't had experience in that, and look where we are. And we can't repeat the same mistakes.
We can't.
Yeah.
I'm not here for that either. So let's talk about when you're assembling your team. What does that look like? Do I see someone like myself there? Do I see, you know, someone that represents everyone?
Absolutely. That's what government's all about.
Right.
You look at my company, that way. Because we're in the business of representing the community on the projects that we build. So the diversity in our company is fantastic. My commitment to this city is my government is going to look like this community. And we're going to be really proud of that. Because if it doesn't look and understand every part of this community, we can't serve you. And
Definitely.
I'm in the business of service.
Definitely. So,
you're going to come over with me?
I'm definitely here for it.
I need you as a senior advisor for
yeah.
sure.
No, I'm here for it all, and I'll definitely.
I probably can't convince you to work at City Hall, but I need your.
You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, speaking of, you know, representation, I really wanted to cover the LGBTQI+ community and seeing more representation in LA. Tonight, I'm going to Lakers Pride Night. Which is such an amazing thing in sports, because, you know, we cover across the board. And of course, there's LGBTQI+ children, youth, people that love sports and need to see themselves represented. So I think it's so huge that the Lakers are doing this. I mean,
it's great.
The floor seats are all rainbow. We have the
gay
men's choir singing.
Good for Jeannie.
Jeannie's amazing.
I love Jeannie.
And, you know, and
she's a good friend.
Yes. And I've known her for years, and I'm so happy that she asked me to be a part of it. And, but, you know, besides, you know, the Lakers, there's lots of things that we can do to show representation in our city. And I wonder and want to know if, like, you have any thoughts and kind of where that can go and what we can do.
Or yeah.
You ask me and I'll come along and advise
That'd
you.
That'd be great. Well, listen, the LGBTQI+ community is a community that we need to embrace, but also need to protect.
Definitely. It's
and
dangerous.
As you know, there's a lot of hate crime.
Definitely.
It's up 200%. I will not tolerate that.
Rick, I was held up at gunpoint in
this city
before. Yes.
Wow.
And so, yes, all of those things.
All of those things. I mean, it breaks my heart to think about it.
Yeah.
The community is also experiencing rising homelessness.
Definitely.
Right? Need to protect them. Make sure.
In youth, gay youth.
That's right.
It's a lot. It's heavy.
It's very heavy because, as you know, families are not accepting it many times, which
Definitely.
Is so wrong, and
yeah.
they end up on the street. So there's a lot of work we need to do, but that's why the community needs to be in City Hall.
Definitely.
It needs to just understand the issues every single day and finding solutions every single day and making everybody feel welcome and protected. This city needs to be a sanctuary of safety. It needs to be the greatest city in the world of diversity and acceptance. That's my standard. And safe and pleasant and clean. Why can't it be?
Why can't it be? I mean, why do we call it the City of Angels? And it's scary.
Yeah, so let's all be angels.
No, let's all be angels. Let's help each other out. And I believe that there is one thing I do have to ask, just because it's one thing that when I mention you again, it's the first thing people ask, and they say that you are anti-pro-choice. And I know this specifically by watching the debates, that you said this was taken out of context of what they said. You were pledging $1 million to ensure, you know, you understand.
Proposition one.
Yes.
That's right.
Explain that, just so
that. Well, I believe in Proposition One, which is the proposition, and I am absolutely, staunchly pro-choice. Always have been. They're conflating being a Catholic, right? And I am a Catholic, and I'm proud of my faith. I love my faith. I'm dear to my faith. I love my God. I think everybody should have something bigger to believe in, whatever that may be. But I'm also like so many people, that you can be Catholic and you can have a faith and you can still believe that people have the right to choose what happens with their body.
Definitely.
Especially about abortion. I am pro-choice. Proposition one takes the right to choose and enshrines it in the Constitution of California. I support that. It was proposed by Gavin Newsom, who's a good friend of mine. I pledged $1 million to help get it passed. The funds are in there to pass it. So again, this is being used as an issue because Karen doesn't want to talk about the real issues. This is not an issue. This is all settled. I couldn't be more clear about it. But thank you for asking.
No, I want people to know what I already know. If people did not take the time to watch the debates. And I want to tell you that, you know, unfortunately, I think there's a large part of my community that just don't trust people in politics. And
rightfully so.
Rightfully so, right?
That's why I'm not a politician.
Exactly. But you are coming into a position of power, and we guess want to know what would make you different than everyone else, but then what you've already said.
Because I've never built my life being beholden to somebody else or worrying about doing what's politically correct to get reelected or reappointed.
And you can't be bought.
And I can't be bought. And I get to do things like I've run my life that are just based on let's do what's right, right, and take the consequences where they may be. I'm fine with that. You know, when I took over LAPD, was appointed as a president of the police commission, it was such a terrible time in LA, like we're dealing with now. It was after the Rodney King beating. Crime was spiking. Yeah. It was terrible. We were 800 officers down, blah, 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 blah. And everybody wanted me to keep, everybody being the political class, wanted me to keep the current chief of police. He was very popular. He wasn't a good chief of police. And so I fired him. And Marcia, it was a crazy time where I was building the Grove, that was 20 years ago, and they were lighting me in effigy in front of City Hall, burning me. They were marching on the job site here to shut it down, to put pressure on me. And my poor wife would call and just say, Rick, they're burning you again. You're on Channel 7 News. And I would say, don't worry about it. I'll be home for dinner.
That I couldn't understand how to deal with that. But, you know.
You just do what's right.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
It gives you strength.
You separate it from what just gives is happening here.
And I called Mayor Hahn at the time and I said, listen, if you want to fire me, fire me. But this is the direction I'm heading. And God bless him. He said, you go do what's right. And I did. And we brought in Bill Bratton and we changed the course of LAPD with reforms. And we changed the course of crime. Got crime down to below levels of 1950.
Wow.
Really amazing.
Wow. And I mean, we need that.
And
we
respected the community. Definitely. Community policing was critically important. And I'm going to bring that back.
Let's talk about that because, you know, I'll tell you that a lot of times that it's kind of scary to go up to a police person because there's not that relationship. I remember, you know, when I went to high school, it was in Central California. It's a smaller agricultural town. We had relationships with the police there. you know, you get caught doing something and they're just like, they'll kind of tell you like how it is, like if like an older brother. Yeah. And, you know, they'll send you home. It's not a it's not like we're going to throw you into the back of a car and, you know, wreck you. This was like actual relationships, and you felt that you could be safe around them and feel safe around them. And I think what you're saying now is needed.
It is. And that really is. Your description is the best description of community policing that we brought in 20 years ago. And it's the real need for what's called senior lead officers, SLOs. That SLO that we brought in 20 years ago, and they've lost a lot of them, we need to bring back a lot more, is literally the cop walking the beat, is knowing the shop owners, is walking through the park and knowing the kids, is knowing the families, giving out their cell phone and saying, if you need something, just call me directly. Don't worry about going through 911, right? Building trust. You cannot prevent and reduce crime unless you have a police department that's dedicated to building trust. There will be people that will never love the cops.
Right.
But you at least want them to trust the cops.
Definitely.
Right? And that was always my philosophy and Bill Bratton's. And literally, that's how we got crime down.
Yeah, because you have to know your community and know people around you. Just sort of like actually thinking about what you did today, riding the subway.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great. You know, I was aboard the Gold Line. This is the second time I've done it in the last couple of weeks. Again, because I want to experience what Angelenos are experiencing. But talking to people on the subway, talked to a homeless gentleman. You know, it was very tough to talk to him and hear his story. I was talking to a student. I was talking to a Latina that works. They're scared to ride it. They're scared of, particularly at night.
Yeah.
And when I wrote it a couple of weeks ago with Cassandra, a great mom, Latina, with telling me experience what I experienced riding the subway with my son, the dirt, the filth, the elevator didn't work, the escalator didn't work. There was a gentleman in a wheelchair, disabled, that was screaming because he couldn't get down to his bus. Encampments. How can you allow this to happen? It's just... Again, it's the broken system with the broken leadership. And I feel for the people that are so dependent on that form of transportation. You want to make it a pleasant experience.
Yeah.
You want people to feel safe. It's not complicated.
Right.
It just isn't complicated.
And the metro, is like, it helps to get from point A to point B. And like, but if that's not safe, then what do you do?
And allow people to do their jobs.
Exactly.
Allow people to go to school.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's going to be a day one issue. Start cleaning it up. Get the elevator. Can you imagine if you came to one of my properties and it was filthy dirty, the escalators didn't work, the elevators didn't work, and you didn't feel safe?
Wouldn't come.
I'm out of business.
Yeah.
But the city doesn't go out of business. But the culture needs to be, if we don't do what's right, we're going to go out of business. And let me tell you something. Cities do eventually go out of business.
Right.
And that's what's at stake right now in our great city, is people stand up and say, I'm leaving. More people left Los Angeles last year than the history of Los Angeles. More businesses did.
That's frightening.
That's scary because it affects all of us.
Yes.
We got to turn around.
Well, let me paint a picture for everyone. So as I said before, I was getting my makeup done at Sephora here at the Grove. And Joseph, my makeup artist, had lovely things to say about you. So I come into your office and everyone's gone. And I'm like, what's going on here? And it was explained to me that that is the Rick Caruso Day of Service. This gave me chills. So everyone is out doing some sort of charity work. I think there's different things they can do.
Right.
But that's what's happening today, correct?
That's right. Caruso Cares Day.
This is so beautiful. I mean, this is any indication of how you're going to run a city. Like, wow. You know, from, like you said, if it was a mess out there, it'd be a problem.
Right.
Well, that's not the experience. You know, not the experience I've had from valet to in shop. The people that work inside these shops have nothing to do specifically with you. Joseph did not have to tell me how great you were. He, you know, his paycheck comes from Sephora, not from you. But this is kind of like the experience people have had with you, the people, the lives that you've touched has rippled through the Grove. Now let's let it ripple through Los Angeles.
I'm ready.
You know?
It's good of you to say I'm ready.
You know, I want to go back. So tell me a little bit more about this Rick Caruso Day of Care and how it started and what exactly it is.
It just goes back to the way that, you know, Tina and I have run our lives together and with our kids, is that no matter what you have, you always give back. Everybody can do it in a different way, whether it's public service or working at a charity or helping young kids study or whatever the case is. Contribute your money, contribute your time, you know, contribute your heart. And Tina and I have been in the community working, you know, very low key for 40 years, starting in South LA and Watts, starting in East LA, educating kids that are below the poverty line, giving them scholarships. I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of Operation Progress that we support, which puts a police officer with a family and a student who's living in the housing projects, mm-hmm. like Nickerson Gardens. So these are families that are literally at or below the poverty line that are probably earning $20,000 to $30,000 a year. Can you imagine that in living in LA?
No.
And we really literally adopt that child from a healthcare and education standpoint from third grade all the way through college. They get to know the police officer who helps mentor them. The police officer gets to understand the community they're serving. It's so powerful and cool.
Wow.
We've got kids that started in third grade that are now in MIT, Duke, Columbia, Harvard. I mean,
so this works.
It works. I want to expand that. Para Los Niños, a school that supports about 70% Latina and Latino in the middle of Skid Row. Again, parents that are at or below the poverty line, they're taking their kids across Skid Row, the greatest sea of inhumanity that our elected officials have allowed, into this little school that is actually a slice of heaven. I'd love to take you down there one day.
Oh, I'd love to see
it. The only problem is you will cry. Like, my wife goes down there because we all work down there as a family. You just cry all day out of joy.
Right.
Seeing, and it's just amazing. So I brought that same thing in the company. And I took everybody in the company a couple of years ago down to Para Los Niños and down to Operation Progress, down to the projects late at night when you really see the danger of the gangs, and said, every one of you is working real hard and making this company profitable. And because of that, we're allowed to give back to those communities, and it's because of you. And so we've instilled this Caruso Cares Day. There's a whole bunch of charities you can sign up for. You don't have to be the one that necessarily we're supporting. You do something, you're supporting. Some of it is planting trees. Some of it is cleaning sidewalks. Some of it is working at Para Los Niños today or Operation Progress.
Wow.
And all of my kids have done the same thing and still do.
I think this is so great. This is
It like, gives you back so much.
Yeah, no. I know because I work with LA Mission a lot. And, you know, when I take my friends down there, I was explaining here when I first found out about this, and I said, you know, wow, I just thought about first the bonding that happens when you're doing this together.
Yeah.
Because when I'll take friends down, and the bond that ends up happening, rather than being in one of my restaurants or one of my nightclubs, are, you know, just meeting out for coffee, but to do something that is giving back and with a friend or, you know, someone you just met, you feel this like-mindedness, first of all. And sense of wanting to build a stronger community. You want to come back and you want to help see these people get off the streets. And, you know, going back to the LA missions and the homelessness, I remember you said that you had a plan and you had something that's not going to cost as much, but that you found a special builder that builds these homes for.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on that? Because I thought it was fascinating. I want people to know about it.
Yeah. And we're going to bring one of these units out next week. I'd love to get you out. We're shipping one out. So there's a really cool company called Boxable. And for all your listeners, I would Google it for fun. It's literally B-O-X-B-L. It's based in Las Vegas. So I flew up to meet with the founder in his probably mid-30s. Really creative guy.
Wow, young.
Young. And he's got a big goal. He said, I'm going to be the biggest company in America. And I said, okay, tell me how you're going to do that. He's building these units that are about 200 square feet. It's got a living room, bedroom, kitchen, bathroom, handicap accessible, and they're hinged. They're hinged so he can sort of collapse them down a bit, so it's cheaper to ship them on the highway, so it's not a wide load.
Right.
He's building them at $60,000 a unit. He's building one every 90 minutes. He said his assembly line is going to get it down to one per minute. And I said, I'll make you a deal. And they're really comfortable. I mean, because I want the homeless to move off the street, get the services they need, but also live with dignity and pride. They're human beings.
Exactly.
Right? Give them some joy in their life, right? Give them a chance to change their lives and have a great future. So I said to him, I said, listen, I'll buy 44,000 of these. We have 44,000 people living on the streets, but you build your factory in Los Angeles in an area that needs jobs. And we'll solve two problems at the same time. And he said, I'm in. So I'm shipping one out next week. We're going to do press conference. We're going to let some people walk through it to visualize that there is a path to solve this problem and to do it quickly. If you can build 44,000 units, one per minute, in 44,000 minutes, we'll get the homes out. We'll build them in an area that they have lawn and trees and the services they need. My God, you changed the direction of the city.
Yeah, definitely.
And get the encampments off. You know, people shouldn't be living on the sidewalks, and people shouldn't be impacted by people living on the sidewalks.
I mean, well, because there's something that happens when, like you said, when you give someone a sense of humanity, you give someone a sense of respect. Because I know, because walking the streets of Los Angeles, I definitely try to make a conscious decision to look into the eyes of the people that are, because I think that, you know, a lot of people would like to turn away, but even I think just a little bit of hope, a little bit of like, I'm here as well, you give to people that kind of sense
you're
of
right.
like you're looking into their eyes, you're seeing them rather than like turning your head away or like looking over here. It can change someone immensely just by treating them like a human being.
That's right.
And I think that is such an important thing, and exactly what you're saying is something that's definitely needed in our community. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that would be implemented, because, I mean, it's not moving them into hotels, right?
No, that hotel idea is a terrible idea.
Of course, it doesn't. It's not going to work. And I don't even see how that would even get brought up as an idea.
Well, you know, that's the leadership of the city we have right now.
Right.
And can you imagine if you're in the hotel business, you're going to be put out of business?
No, that just, why would you do that to someone else's business? I mean, that goes along.
You don't need to.
Right.
Right.
And that goes along with, I remember you saying that right now, currently, the LAPD cannot remove people, correct? Like,
they're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to.
Right.
And I mean, and with that respect, it affects the business owner currently that they're sitting in front of.
That's right.
You know, and that kind of ripple effects then possibly could get them to be homeless because they can't have it run a
That's
successful
exactly
business.
Right. It's a domino effect.
It's a domino effect.
Right.
And like, where does that change happen? Is that with the commissioner?
That change happens, I think, also with the culture and leadership, right?
Because everyone seems kind of separated, right? In their different districts. Like,
yes.
This police station has nothing to do with this one. There's no like one thing, like especially with the Metro. Is there just different kind of like districts handling or no one's handling?
It's a different sort of government entity that's in charge of Metro, but the mayor gets four votes on that. So it has a lot of authority to help direct it. And the other thing is the mayor has a big bully pulpit. You know, there's a lot of talk the mayor doesn't have enough power and authority to make change. I just don't find that to be true. I find it to be an excuse.
Right.
But whatever the power is that we don't have, the mayor doesn't have, we certainly have a big voice as mayor. I'm going to use it.
Yeah.
Right? And when something isn't right, I'm going to call it out. And mayors need to do that. We haven't had a mayor in a long time that's done that.
Well, I'll tell you, there's got to be some sort of power because people are watching like I've never seen before.
Mm.
You know,
good.
From Washington to New York, everyone is watching this because there is a power in it. Else people wouldn't watch it or they wouldn't care. who becomes mayor, because if there's no change to be made, but obviously there is change that can be made in a positive way. Would you say to people that are leaning more towards Karen Bass right now, and how do we get them over to the Rick Caruso side?
Well, what I would say is, listen, I respect everybody's opinion on this. And I absolutely respect the fact that there's going to be people that just feel Karen Bass is going to be a great mayor. But I would ask people to look at track record and performance and what's proven by somebody, because past performance is the indicator to future performance. Karen's had 20 years in office.
Wow.
20 years. And are you happier with your city? Are you happier with your neighborhood? Do you feel safer? Do you feel like your children can walk to school alone? Do you go out now and take off your jewelry and your ring? And
I do.
Right? My wife the other day was taking off her wedding ring, and I thought she was leaving me. I was joking with her. She said, I'm going to the market.
I know.
And then I saw yesterday, she's wearing a different ring. She said, I just bought some cheap phony ring to put on.
Yeah.
What is happening? So if you like the direction we're heading.
I mean, that's trauma. That's even if you haven't personally experienced it, but you know that it's possible, that is trauma that sits in. Like I said, I was held up at gunpoint. I know where I am all the time. Like, for instance, even walking across the street to my own nightclub where all my security guards are.
Yeah.
I am terrified to walk across the street. So my bag gets hidden. I don't walk with my bag.
Yeah.
I have a specific.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, it is, because I walk with a specific jacket that has a hoodie.
Wow.
And I cover up and I walk straight into where I need to go, where I feel safe. And then I take all the things off.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost as a level of fear of when, I'll tell you, when I went to Dubai. You know, obviously someone like me is not accepted there. They have different policies and they have their own thing going on there. But that fear for me is just as high here in a different respect, where I'm covering up and doing all the things so that I don't get attacked. And, you know, like you said, why do we have to live in a place? Then what's the point?
Right.
You know, and understandable why people would be leaving. That's why
right.
we need these changes.
That's exactly
because
right.
I don't want to keep walking on the street and having to think, I think two outfits ahead. You know, like I'm changing in the car, or, you know, if I'm coming, you know, to your event is different than if I have to walk down the street and go to something else, or pick up my dry cleaning is way
right.
different. But if I have to do multiple things throughout the day, this is what's happening in my car. Sweaters and glasses.
It's stressful. It's anxiety. It's a waste of time.
It's a waste of time.
It's not a healthy lifestyle.
No.
That's why you vote for Rick Caruso.
That's all I'm saying.
Because you said it well. Because you got to change the direction of the city. Again, if you believe the system is working, if you believe government is working for you, Karen is a product of that system, then vote for Karen. If you believe that you need to have some changes and make you feel safer, the city is dirty. It needs to be clean. The graffiti needs to be off of the buildings. The sidewalks need to be clean. The parks need to be nice for families to enjoy, anyone to enjoy. The beaches should not have encampments on it. People get scared to go to the beaches now.
Yeah,
our
definitely.
Tourism is way down. We're not accepting businesses. We're not promoting businesses. 90% of Los Angeles is small business. Mm-hmm. We make it so difficult for small businesses to operate. I want to make it easy for small businesses to operate, to grow, hire more people, good paying jobs, grow our economy.
Support them.
Support them.
Yeah. I mean, breaks my heart. You know, it's different because of the pandemic and things closed because of certain reasons with that. But when I see a restaurant, you know, I have my own restaurants, but when I see other people's restaurants and see them, they've closed, it breaks my heart because I know the level of work, the people that have put like blood, sweat, and tears into opening a place, you know, from every day, from like waiters that love their jobs and work there. Like, you know, so it does break my heart to see other businesses close, you know.
Of course. And the domino effect, which you understand because you run so many restaurants and clubs, you close that business, it's not only heartbreaking for the owner. What about everybody working there? What about the servers, the dishwashers,
definitely.
The valet parking? It spreads.
Doing the jobs I can't do.
Right.
You know, and
let's reverse that.
It's all collective. And, you know, I agree that something needs to change, and I think that change is here. But I do want to ask, I have to ask you this one question. One of my best friends, August Getty, wanted to know, will you be moving into the Getty home as mayor if you're elected?
You know, I love my
home. You love your home.
And I love my bed, and I love my family. All of my kids live 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
But
I didn't even know this was a possibility. This was brought up to me.
It is, and it's a great name. And listen, God bless the Getty property, family for yeah. their generosity. I'm going to fix it up, and I'm going to use it certainly for events and meetings and, you know, celebrate the great Getty name and their generosity for that home. So I will definitely be using it, but I'll probably go home to sleep.
Well, I'll have to definitely come see it for sure.
You should. It's great.
So, Rick, you know, speaking of the community, and I already know about the LGBTQ Center in Los Angeles. Tell me about your visit and how that went.
Oh, I'd love to. Well, the LGBTQ Center is one of those bright stars in the city of Los Angeles that is serving the community from youth to the elderly,
yes,
to job training, to teaching people how to be chefs. I walked in the kitchen, which I think is one of the coolest ideas in the world.
When I saw that, well, one, my niece is a pastry chef, so, but to give people these tools, to give young youth a sense of belonging.
Yes.
You know, to be able to work in the cafe and make a wage.
That's
and
right.
give them a home.
That's right.
And give them education. This works.
And so many, as you know, of the youth that are LGBTQI+ have been thrown out of their homes.
Yeah.
That don't have that support system.
And how awful is that?
Which breaks my heart. But yeah. this foundation gives them that support system, gives them love, gives them pride, gives them hope, giving them a career, give them housing, right? Off the street, which is so dangerous for them.
Yeah.
And I was just really moved by it. And the leadership there is incredible.
Definitely. They know what they're
doing
there.
I brought my daughter with me. We had just the greatest visit.
Yeah.
And that's, if I can just say.
Because there's real heart in there.
Real
with
heart.
Everyone that works there, they want to be there.
And
they
success.
Want to help in success.
Let's lean in, support more of those foundations, and just expand it where we're serving more people. Tonight, 13,000 women are going to go to sleep on the streets.
Wow.
13,000. The Downtown Women's Center that I spent a bunch of time at is doing God's work also, serving about 5,000 women a year. But they told me, Amy, the head of it, said, the majority of those women will be assaulted tonight on the streets. Mm. They struggle to find safety. That's happening with our youth. That's happening in your community, our community.
Definitely.
We just got to stop it. We got to stop it now and yeah. say we will not allow anybody to live that kind of life anymore.
No.
That's what I'm committed to.
Well, I'm here with you on that. Is there anything else you want to make a point or a shout out? Before we close out this amazing episode, I honestly don't want to stop talking to you. So,
but I know you're. Any time. I love talking to you.
I know you're on a time crunch.
No, you know my shout out is, as your mayor, there's so much more I need to learn. The journey of being in this campaign has been so exciting for me because I've been meeting people I would never otherwise meet. I've been in the corners of the city I probably would just drive by and never stop and get to know people. I've been doing this with my wife and my kids as a family. It's been such a rewarding experience, but there's a lot I need to learn and there's a lot of people I need to help me. And I just want to get out there that if I'm spending time in my office as mayor, I'm failing in my job. Mm-hmm. I want to be on the streets, in the community, in people's homes, in auditoriums, in town halls, listen, learn, and start moving the needle.
Definitely.
So thank you for just being so generous to me.
No, I'm so happy that you're here. And everything you just said really speaks to why I'm here and why I want to share stories. Because we say here at Marsha, 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 that if you don't know about it, it's hard to care about it.
That's
so,
a great line.
You know, let's start sharing and
Can
caring.
Can I steal that line?
It's yours.
All right.
Please. Because it only...
Yeah, it's great.
You know, this is great for everyone.
Yeah.
This is... You can't learn enough about the human experience.
That's right.
And everyone has their own story.
That's right.
You have your story, and I'm so thankful you shared yours here today with me and with us, and that you're out there in the street learning about other people's stories in our community. This is makes a whole family, and Los Angeles needs to be a family again. Because I think we're so scattered and we're so spread out. And we need someone like you to bring us together.
Let's all lock arms. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm just really blessed to have you in my life.
No,
I really
mean that. Same too. I'm so happy that we met, and I think this was meant to be, and I'm so happy that we're here today.
This podcast is brought to you by Vocal Podcast Network. Executive producers are Michaela Simon and Marsha Molinari. Produced by Yonta Taiwo and Morgan McDonald. Shooting and editing by Morgan McDonald. Music by Aaron Reese. Artwork by Dominic Demetz and hosted by Marsha Molinari. Remember to follow at Marsha Molinari and at Vocal Podcasts everywhere. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast.